Hello again, listener. This is episode 27 of the Twinsies podcast. My name is Lucas Cook.
And I'm Dan Blewett.
And going into this one blind, Dan.
We have no topic.
For those of you listening, basically every time we do this, we sit down. Basically, we don't speak about the podcast until about 10 minutes before we sit down and go, what are we talking about today?
And sometimes we come up with a thing. Oh, we'll talk about baseball sports. And then other times we just draw a blank. So today we've drawn a blank.
You've drawn a blank today.
But it's November 1st. Halloween was yesterday.
What's it? Is it All Saints Day? Is that what today is?
I don't know any of the Saints. Oh. So
I think the day after Halloween, I don't know. My Halloween lore is not up to speed, but I think it's called All Saints Day. Yeah, but yesterday was Halloween.
I'm very disappointed in all the Warbird children because we only got 5 pumpkin entries to our Swag Lantern contest, which has historically gotten us like 8 to 10, something like that. And, of course, 2 of them were for me. So only 3 legitimate entries.
Yeah, out of our, I mean, how many kids we train? 150? 200 kids? We get 5 entries?
It's very sad.
Well, 3 entries, really. You just don't count.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I ask, you know, about Halloween candy. And these Halloween candy mixes are bizarre. Why are you going to mix Milk Duds with Kit Kats with Whoppers? Like, why even continue to make Whoppers? Just so you can sell, like,
well,
I understand why they put the trash candy in the bag with all the good candy, because then they can sell some of the trash
you,
candy.
Yeah.
But why not just get rid of the trash candy? Do you really have a market for Whoppers?
Well, you know, okay.
Why are they still making all these excess Whoppers?
We might talk for 35 minutes.
Why do they have a pile of Whoppers somewhere that they have to offload every October 31st?
First of all, a bag of candy was given to us as a gift. We are very appreciative of the bag of candy.
Yeah, that's great.
Having said that,
crushing Milk Duds from it, yeah.
Right. Having said that, Whoppers and Milk Duds are trash.
Milk Duds are not as trash.
Not as trash.
I grew up with Milk Duds, so they have a little, you know, place in my heart. But
I mean, it was a nice little experiment that we had because we had it all in a Halloween-themed bowl on our counter, and it was equal parts Whoppers, Milk Duds, and Kit Kats. And within minutes, all the Kit Kats were gone, and it was just Milk Duds and Whoppers.
Yeah, great.
Which is a good experiment for, I mean, obviously, Kit Kats killing it, but Whoppers and Milk Duds have been irrelevant for 70 years.
Like, candy corn, the worst candy, perhaps, of all time. It's made mostly of, like, ground-up horse bones and
I don't understand,
coloring.
And that's like, it's like a consistent running joke that everyone makes, like, oh, candy corn is the worst candy, it tastes stale right out of the bag, and it's like, well, then how does it still exist if we're all thinking this? I think it's just like people buy it because it's tied so closely to Halloween. It's like more as a decoration. No one eats it. They feel like just put it on their table and then throw it away.
You wonder if it makes a profit. Obviously, like some huge candy company,
sure,
like some huge candy company just has the rights to candy corn, or maybe they all do, I don't know. On how candy patents work.
Yeah, it's candy corn public domain.
And they just roll out some candy corn this time of year, I assume. But I don't know. Is there money in candy corn?
I mean,
what are candy corn futures trading at?
There has to be. There has to be money in candy corn. I'm sure the margins are good because it's garbage.
You can get ground horse bones for like pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, and so it wouldn't still exist if it didn't make someone money. But yeah. I mean, I haven't put a piece of candy corn in my mouth since I was probably 12. It was so garbage. Actually, that's a lie. Every about 4 years, I'm like, let me give this another shot. And it's always garbage. So I just spit it out. Blap.
Yeah, there's a lot of dead crickets around the gym, which there's a completely intact. I would sooner put one of those in my mouth.
Which begs a question. So when you, back in your trick-or-treating days, which are well in the past, what was the number one, like when someone dropped this particular candy in your bucket, you were like, oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, you call it cliche, but it's always Reese's peanut butter cups or the derivatives. I mean, you can't.
It's hard to beat.
It's hard to beat. I love Almond Joy I'm a big fan of coconut, so I like Almond Joy or Mounds when they were around. But that's also a candy that kids are, like, skeptical of because you don't go Jones in for a Mounds bar.
Right, yeah, I didn't.
But
I was not
like
a Mounds
coconut
guy.
A lot. Coconut and chocolate's awesome.
See, I wasn't a coconut guy. I was a big Reese's, obviously, and then Snickers. Also, I just saw this at the store a couple months ago. Are you aware that they make a Reese's cup now that has Reese's pieces jammed up in the inside?
I saw this.
God.
I thought it was when we were in Vegas I saw that.
Oh, my God.
When I was in Vegas recently, I saw it. Yeah, it looks amazing. You had it?
I had it. It's awesome. It's like,
well, yeah. If you just think of the constituent parts.
Yeah, it was insane.
It cannot be good.
That and the, I'm a big fan of the King Cup, too, because I like the peanut buttery middle, and so you get a better peanut butter to chocolate ratio on the King Cup, which is like I don't know, probably 1.5 times the height of a traditional cup.
Wait, so you get more peanut butter per chocolate?
Yes. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I haven't had it, but the peanut butter to chocolate ratio is very important.
It is very important.
That might be right for you, but not right for some.
Yeah, and I think that's why they have such a diverse line.
Yeah, I mean, the standard option, I think, is about right for me. But then again, I haven't tried the King Cup, so I don't know.
So then what was the candy?
Well, and the little ones, have you ever had the little, they have a bag now that are, it's like miniatures, but they're smaller than the individually wrapped miniature ones.
Okay.
But they come unwrapped. So you buy this little bag, and they come unwrapped. Like, you just
once you pop, you can't stop.
Rush them.
They're like M&M's almost, but
pretty
much. Cups.
They're about the size of a dime. So if you like a three-dimensional dime size.
Reese's is killing it right now.
They're more chocolatey, obviously, then, mm-hmm. because they have to have a similar, you know, they have to have a certain amount of chocolate to maintain the integrity of the
right. Otherwise, you just be spilling all over the bag.
But my teammate Todd, who was the feature of Jeff Passan's book, The Arm, he and I were teammates with Long Island in 2016, and he's just like loves junk food. I mean, just crushes chicken nuggets from McDonald's, and he has some sandwich that they talked about in the book, but he turned me on to these cups because he would come in every day with them, which, you know, probably didn't need these in his diet, but he would just demolish bags of those little Reese's miniatures that are unwrapped, and that's where I first came to know them.
Well, that brings me to my next question, which is, what candy, when you were going, again, in your trick-or-treating days, what candy would you go out, and when someone reached to put it in your bag, you were just like, I'm good. No, thank you.
Any of those ones that look like they came in wax paper, like Necco wafers, were disgusting.
Yeah, what the hell is up with those
things? Why do those exist? I don't know. It's like,
I don't even know what those are called.
Necco wafers. They're terrible. They're
wasn't there also one that was flavoring. Because Necco wafers are like, yeah, like are chalky, right?
Yeah,
there was also one that was sort of like gross toffee that was in like a black wax or orange wax.
There's Charleston Chew is not bad. I think I know which one you're talking about. I don't know.
No one knows. No one knows.
There's a lot of weird ones that come out.
See, I wasn't a big, I wasn't a big chalky, like Smarties, Necco wafers. That was a hard pass for me.
Yeah. And I always did, you know, like I just crush my Halloween candy that first night and then a little bit the next day. And then I never want to eat candy again.
Yeah.
And
then you're set for until Christmas at least.
So you wonder if Halloween has some sort of effect on obesity where it's almost like, you know, if you get caught smoking as a kid, you're maybe your old school dad lock you in the closet and make you smoke a whole pack or something.
Right. Yeah.
I wonder if Halloween has if there's like a sharp drop off in
candy like consumption
over the next couple months. Sugar consumption in general over the next month. Probably not. We Americans love being obese and disgusting, but
it also reminds, like, I was never, in general, I was not a big candy guy, and Halloween always reminded, like, I never felt a burning desire to go trick or treating, and it always reminded me of when I was younger and I would go to parades. And obviously at parades, they like huck candy at all the children on the curb. And I vividly remember being like 10, 11, 12, standing off the curb and just watching all my peers like run out in the middle of, like in front of a horse, like out in the middle of a parade and almost getting trampled. And I was like, what in the hell are these kids doing? Why, like the
have you no
primal,
dignity?
Yeah, the primal like obsession with going out and grabbing the candy was never made sense to me. And the trick-or-treating is kind of the same way. Like people be like, oh, we're going trick-or-treating. We're going on Thursday and Friday. Like, I don't care to go.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my big thing with Halloween is, and I think I got disillusioned by like 12, was that I always had my mind like, I'm going to be this great ninja. And I had like, you know, I imagine my costume.
Brain.
And then I end up just having like black sweatpants on and like a black sweatshirt. And I was just like,
I look like a Goodwill ninja.
I just look so not what I had in my head that I was like, I hate this.
What was
and
your?
And after a while, I just didn't like Halloween. I stopped trick or treating probably like 13. I just like, it just wasn't my thing.
What was your best Halloween costume?
I don't even know. I just, like I said, they all fell short of what was in my head, and that was just really disappointing to me.
I was disillusioned when I was probably around that same age, 11 or 12, and my Halloween costume consisted of me putting on my normal jeans, a normal t-shirt, a normal red hooded sweatshirt, and then I shoved a soccer ball on top of my head and put the hood of the sweatshirt over the soccer ball. So like my hood came up past my eyes so you couldn't see my face and it looked like I had a soccer ball head. So that was it. That's all my costume contained. And then I went to the town like costume judging contest and got third place with that. And I was like, what? All I did was put a soccer ball on my head. They got third place.
Small town judging.
Well, that's also true. But I don't know what my best one was. I liked, when I was little, I liked going as a vampire. I tried to go as a vampire as often as I could. I was a big, I had a weird obsession with the Universal monster movies. So like the black and white movies with like Bela Lugosi as Dracula. And I don't even know. Boris Karloff, I think, was Frankenstein, maybe. Or maybe he was a mummy. I can't remember. But weird. Now looking back, that's like super weird because those movies are kind of boring. I mean, they're charming because they're old and the actors are funny, but I just would rather on Halloween sit in and watch those with my mom than go trick-or-treating. I don't know what that says about me as a kid, but
yeah, I'm learning a lot right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of, I read Frankenstein not last summer, but the previous.
You said you liked it, right?
Yeah, it was interesting because you hear these stories, like you hear of Dr., you know, you heard of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I don't know if kids still hear about that now, but I'd always heard of it, and I'd heard of Frankenstein. And you just feel like you get the gist of it, but you don't. Like, the Frankenstein, so if you read it, which I had a Kindle, so I was kind of, like, going nuts. I was crushing Kindle books, but they're all, like, free. So I found it really interesting, especially Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, where, you know, Mr. A, you think Jekyll was the, I thought Jekyll was the evil one, because that name just sounds more evil. But right. So that has some really interesting philosophical ramifications, because the overwhelming theme in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde is that Dr. Jekyll chooses, like, he creates the serum, and he becomes Mr. Hyde, who's two-thirds of his height, and sort of, like, brutish and evil. It's, like, basically, like, the evil part of Dr. Jekyll that, like, everyone sort of has inside. Like, everyone has that maybe capacity to, like, beat someone to death, I guess, or, you know, do bad things. It's basically like a physical manifestation of Dr. Jekyll's like evil side. And so after he creates his serum, when he's Hyde, it's almost like he's riding shotgun in his evil self. So Hyde is like his own separate person. And so Jekyll would never do the things that Hyde does. So this all like comes to fruition because Hyde kills someone. And so it's weird. Like, so Jekyll decides to become Hyde. It like gives him like this rush. He's like acting sort of on his evil side, on his compulses, but he would never do that stuff. But he's sort of like letting it's like letting your dog out of the yard when you know it's going to bite somebody. So you wonder, the question that they ponder is Jekyll culpable for Hyde's actions? Because he would never do that stuff. But when he lets his evil side out, when he lets Hyde out, he knows that Hyde's going to do these things. And Jekyll is still in his consciousness where he's just sort of like riding along and he's like aware. So he kind of gets to participate in it, but he would never do those things himself. So it's a really interesting story.
Yeah, and I think when you revisit all those books like Dracula and Frankenstein and Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde and The Invisible Man, they've sort of been bastardized in popular culture as like, you know, they're like fun. Like, yeah. Oh, Frankenstein wears, or Dracula wears fancy clothes and Frankenstein doesn't like fire. But yeah, when you go back and look, they all have themes that run deeper like that, which I'm sure was why they've stood the test of time, is each of them kind of visits a different, like you're saying, like a deeper theme, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and so Jekyll over time, the more he becomes Hyde, the more difficult it is for him to transition back into Jekyll. And he starts to lose control, and he starts to sometimes just wake up as Hyde, or he'll go to bed and not convert back. So when he starts to realize that he's losing control of himself, like the more he lets Hyde out, the more he's almost becoming Hyde, that's when he decides that he like can't let that continue to happen. And we'll give the rest of it away if you want to download this free,
yeah, spoilers, free Kindle, no spoilers Kindle, out of a book that's existed.
It's not super long, and the language wasn't crazy. Frankenstein was a much more difficult read. It starts off like the most boring book of all time.
Yeah, that's the knock against
all these,
it.
Yeah, the letters to his sister, but I just didn't know that, you know, like Frankenstein, the monster, just wanted to be loved.
Yeah, he just wants love.
He just wanted to be loved. Yeah. And he's banished, and everyone wants to kill him, and he's forced to just live up in the mountains, like shivering and hungry and eating acorns, and he just like wants to be friends and like be loved by people, and they just continue to reject him. And then he, over time, gets so fed up with being rejected that he lashes back, and
right.
And he's like very eloquent.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, when did you learn to speak?
Yeah.
But it's an interesting book.
All right, so let's see, other Halloween things. How do you feel about, are you a horror movie guy, scary movie guy?
Not really. I don't like feeling that way, and I'm not a big fan of gore, so I don't know what that says about me. But
my thing is, I don't mind the, well, there's like, in my mind, there's two different types of, and I'm probably going to come across as ignorant to movie cinephiles, but there's two different kinds of horror movies. There's like the pop out and scare you one, and then there's the one that is supposed to make you feel like anxious maybe or nervous. But I'm thinking in particular, I just watched Get Out, which is, I don't know which guy it is, but one of the guys from Key and Peele made it. It was a pretty good movie, but, and it was a, probably the best horror movie, air quotes, that I've seen in a while. My thing is with scary movies, when they're meant to either pop out and scare you a bunch, which is kind of lame and cheap, or make you feel some sort of like tension, and when they miss their mark, which often, in my opinion, they do, then you're just left with like a crappy movie, because rarely do they actually have good plots. Get Out had like a decent plot. Like if they're not hitting on making your skin crawl, then you're just watching like a terrible movie. I'm trying to think of, and even like the old, like Friday the 13th and what's the Freddy Krueger one? Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Those are like, eh.
Well, I like the older ones because they had more of a plot and they're more like scary because of suspense and like all that. But you see, like I saw Blade Runner, the new Blade Runner, and there was a preview for, what is it, this new Saw movie, I guess is probably,
oh yeah, I think it's called Jigsaw now.
And like that to me is just like, it's just like torture porn. Like that's not, they weren't movies. They stopped being like, the first one was like kind of a movie and it was scary. After that, it was just like, how gross can we like mutilate the human body and
right.
just like make people cringe. And I'm not into that. And it's also just gruesome. So
same idea with a movie called The Hills Have Eyes, which came out a long time ago. I saw it when I was, I guess, in high school.
I think I saw that one too. That one's pretty violent.
It's super gross. And the first, I think it's like the first 10 or 15 minutes, I was just like, this is not, it was just so bizarre to me because I went home and I was like, what sick person goes out to Best Buy when that movie comes out and like, oh, I got to get the Blu-ray of that so I can watch it like 1,000 times. Because it was just so gross and unsettling. And I was like, well, like clearly this was their goal, was just to make me as uncomfortable as possible, which they did, but that I didn't like enjoy it. And that kind of turned me off towards that whole genre in general, because exactly what you're saying, which is like, let's all sit around a table and devise the grossest stuff that we can put on camera. And it's like, meh.
Yeah, not super into that.
Have you ever been to a haunted house?
Yeah, I've been to a couple. I went to the one in Clinton, Illinois.
Oh, Clintucky, the Dirty South.
Which, that one's okay, I feel like. I don't remember that much about it, but I felt like I left it feeling okay.
Wait, when was this?
Oh, 2010, 11?
Oh, okay.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Before we knew each other.
I have also been to the Clinton Haunted House, and that was back in I was in high school, so probably 2005, 2006. It's been around for a while. I liked them when I was younger, but now that now that I'm old, because they're fun if you're like, buy into the whole, like, I'm scared. But if you go and sometimes you're generally scared and it's like, ha ha ha, ha, I'm scared. But then sometimes you're not. And it's always awkward how to act when you're not scared. Cause you're supposed to be like, am I supposed to pretend so neither of us feel awkward? Like you're in a zombie mask and I don't want to make you feel like you did a bad job. You're trying your hardest.
Yeah.
And then at the end, like at the end of the Clinton one, I remember at least when I went, 12 years ago, they had a guy with a chainsaw at the end who would like chase you out of the house. And I think I might have gone twice, because the first time I went, I was like, oh my gosh, this is scary. And I like ran. But the second time I knew it was coming. And so it was like, okay, I know you're not going to chop my head off with a chainsaw. So what do I do? It's always made me kind of feel socially weird. I was like, eh. Plus there's a weird vibe that people, if you're a participant, I'm guessing you've never participated in a haunted house.
What does that mean, participated?
Like actor.
No, I've not. Certainly not.
I did it once when I was younger. I was a zombie boy and like lay down. I was like, I think I was, my lower half was underneath something and I was like laying on the ground and I was like supposed to be dead. And then when people walk by, I'd like jump out and scare them. And people have this weird, people act differently when they can't see your face. So if like you're a mascot or if you have a mask on or something, anything along those lines, because it's like weirdly anonymous, people have no qualms.
You lose your humanity.
Exactly.
When you have a mask on. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this other time I had to dress up as Gumby for this old job I used to have. And people were super, super mean to me. And I was like, if you could see my face, you guys wouldn't be mean to me.
you could see my tears running down.
Yeah. If my tears weren't getting soaked up by this polyester Gumby suit.
Yeah. The whole mask thing is important. It, like you said, it, like that's what separates a regular man from being like a superhero. Like, you have to have a mask on.
Yeah, or a regular man from being a supervillain.
Like, even in the movies, when they pull like, and Toby Maguire was a great example because he just looked like a little pansy in real life. But
oh yeah,
when they take his mask off, he's like no longer Spider-Man. He's just like this little wussy boy. Yeah.
Well, so little wussy boy.
Very bad. It wouldn't matter what you looked like. It's just like not the same anymore.
Yeah, you lose your.
You transcend humanity when you become, you know, superhero or whatever. You know, if you're getting chased by, we should do some A/B testing. You know, just so next time you chase someone with a chainsaw, do it with no mask and then a mask and see how scared people get.
Yeah, or how likely they are to punch me in the face versus not punch me in the face.
Yeah.
There's that video of, I was referencing this the other day. Have you ever seen that video of, it's super old now, but a kid in like a high school hallway standing next to one of those big blue recycle slam down lid things, and it's closed, the lid is closed, and then this dude pops up with a mask on, and he scares the crap out of the kid, and he just turns around and jacks him right in the face, and he like gets knocked out and goes right back down into the recycling bin, like a jack, or a, not a jack-o'-lantern, jack in the box, there we go.
Yeah, but if you just want to really freak people out, if you just like stood in their front yard with like a mask on and just like stared,
just
gawked,
yeah,
that's
just
like a common thing you see in all these trailers of like scary movies. It's just like someone just outside and they're like, "Oh my god," they're just gawking.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary. It just creeps you out because like they don't have a soul.
What? Yeah,
you can't even kill them. Or they're not real.
But one of the things in Get Out was there's this scene where he's the main character, the protagonist, is outside in the dark. And then this guy just comes out of the darkness, full sprint, like right at the camera. And it's super terrifying because anytime someone's sprinting at you out of the dark, and he just makes a beeline for him and then turns at the last second. But it was like super creepy.
That's why those zombie movies are so good. I'm a big fan of zombie movies, and they're just like sprinting at you.
I was going to say that was the game changer. Was it 28 Days Later? Maybe
I think that was the first sprinting zombie.
Yeah, that changed the game. Yeah. Game done changed because normally,
what is their energy system for this? I mean, you know, is this ATP?
Exactly.
Well, how are they producing?
How fast
this?
Twitch are they?
Yeah, I mean, they've got to be in ketosis. They're only eating flesh,
right?
So that's not great for endurance, you know.
Yeah, but because up to that point, zombies were like, oh, whatever. You're going to try to bite me. I'll just back up.
Yeah.
but then when they were sprinting at you, that was terrifying.
Yeah. Then you make bad decisions. You don't know where you're going.
Plus when you become a zombie and I'm assuming your muscle tissue decomposes. So then what determines the speed at which a zombie is sprinting? Like is the fat lady who gets turned into a zombie and the Olympic sprinter who gets turned into a zombie 4 months down the road going to sprint the same amount of speed?
I don't know.
These are the questions.
I would assume
these are the questions.
There are still fast twitch and slow twitch zombies, I would have to assume. But then again, I don't know. But 28 Days Later was a weird movie because there was kind of minimal zombie activity until like the very, very end. Like most of the movie, they're just like cruising around the English countryside eating irradiated apples and doing whatever, but there was just a long period of a lull, and then at the end it gets pretty violent. But for whatever reason, the 28 Days Later franchise, they love the thumb and the eye move. I don't know why. That's a recurring
theme.
The
eye
like,
gouge.
It's at least once in both movies, that in 28 Weeks Later, where they're just shoving their thumbs into the person's eyes to kill them. It's a horrifying way to go. Ugh. Like what even what happens? What are the mechanics of that? I don't know. Like, you keep pushing their eyes in with your thumbs. Like, do you poke your brain with
how
your
far,
thumb? Do they,
yeah.
they
Cause it doesn't
lose it
seem...
because it's just pain? Is it just pain that they, like, pass out? Like, smushing your eyeballs doesn't kill you.
Right, that's what I was going to say. That's definitely not a lethal move.
I don't know.
Are you getting past their eyeball to thumb their brain? Is that what gets you? The brain thumb?
I mean, you're going to... Is there
but
any
you got to dig around in there.
Is there a bone layer behind your eyes? This is getting very morbid and gross. I don't know, but...
I don't think there's bone. There's not bone behind your eyeball. It goes because your eyeball goes right into your optic nerve, which runs right into your little brain.
Hmm.
So
I don't know. It's a horrifying thing. It makes you cringe in both those movies.
Here's a question. So one of the fun things to fantasize about is a zombie apocalypse. If the big caveat here is if they're jogging zombies and not sprinting zombies or walking zombies, even better. Who's on your zombie team? Who makes your zombie apocalypse team where if you have to hold out with like four other people until you can find an antidote or whatever, or find the human's last bastion, Who makes your zombie team?
Well, none of the people listening in Radioland are going to know who these people are. So,
what do you need? What do you need a what are the special abilities that each person needs to bring to the table? You need like a medic person who can heal wounds. You need like a doctor. You need someone who knows, you know, there are like people who are just like can make stuff, or like a survivalist. You need that person. You need like some muscle, and maybe someone with some guns. Like those are your...
I suppose. I'd probably just want to be by myself.
Yeah. Go find a bunker to hunker down in. Hunker in a bunker.
Yeah. I don't know. It's... I feel like fleeing in any of these scenarios is not the ideal way to go. That just like hunkering down is clearly the way to go.
I can't remember. It might be 28 Days Later. No, I don't think it is. There's one zombie movie out there where there's a bunch of people hanging out on a roof, and they're talking to a bunch of people on another roof, and...
Oh, it's Dawn of the Dead.
They're just hanging out, and he holds up a sign that says like Jay Leno,
yeah,
and he snipes
them, yeah.
A zombie looks like Jay Leno.
That was also a good movie. That opening scene, that movie was great because the it's like a nurse gets home, you know, early after like third shift, you know, lays down to sleep with her husband, and then like the little neighbor girl opens the door slowly, and she's like, oh hey, like I guess that she like probably comes and goes, whatever. And then she sees her like jaw is like missing, and she goes, and she sprints at her, and well, the dad sees her, or the husband sees her, and he's like, "Oh, honey, what's wrong?" And then she sprints at him, jumps and bites his neck, and then just like that's the start of the movie. I thought it was such a great opening scene, because he just like cascades down in slow motion onto the bed, and blood shooting off his neck, and she's like, "No," right. And she like, you know, as a nurse tries to like help him, and then she's like. Throws the girl down the hallway, and so the girl like slides down the hallway. She's probably like a 5-year-old, and then she does this like super athletic like karate flip back up to her feet, and she's like ugh, and then she starts sprinting back down. She locks the door, and then her husband quickly becomes a zombie, and then this woman pieces out and gets in her car, and that's the start of the movie. But that was a good one. That was a very interesting combination of all the zombie elements with some humor in there too.
Outside of I'm sure the pain of transitioning, I'd be totally on board with becoming a zombie. Do you maintain sentience? Like, can you, or do you just become like a robot?
No, I think you're like a fly, except for light. You're just seeking humans, smell, I guess.
Yeah.
But the question is this: you see all these zombies.
What is
feeding? In all these zombie movies, when people get overcome by them, you know. Oh, the zombies break through and they're storming inside the house. They all start biting and eating the person. So where, like, if you get bitten, you become a zombie. But in most of these scenes, when you finally get overcome, do they completely consume you? Then you don't even get to be a zombie. You know what I mean? Like, they're just going to keep eating you. Like, they want to eat flesh. So if there's, like, 10 of them, clearly they're going to eat enough of you where you're not going to work out.
You're right. This is the number one question.
How many people get actually consumed? And then, so if you don't get eaten, so you just get bitten, and then you become a zombie. So in a lot of these movies, a zombie, they bite you, and then within, like, 30 seconds, you're a zombie, you know? And so then, do they keep eating you? It's like, hey, no, we're on the same team now. Like,
yeah.
stop eating me.
Bro.
Or like, no.
You got me.
When... You know, so if the human,
when does human flesh
and zombie flesh start?
Yeah.
When does it stop?
Where does human flesh end and zombie flesh begin?
Because then they only have a minute or 30 seconds or whatever the incubation time is to like eat as much as they can, because then they're eating a zombie.
Yeah, why aren't zombies eating other zombies?
And
the other question is, let's say you and I are humans in the zombie apocalypse and I shoot you in the head and you die. And then a zombie comes up and bites your dead corpse. Do you become a zombie? Does your transition into a zombie... predicated on the fact that you're alive? Because what if you get bit like right after you die?
Is that a necro zombie?
Yeah,
be like do zombies have weird like
dead undead?
Some are into dead humans. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, because then the last thing you would want is if we're assuming I'm going to become a zombie, I don't want you to like eat my leg off and my arm off. I'm a one-legged zombie. Leave me alone. Leave me mostly intact so that I can be a formidable zombie rather than like a skeleton zombie.
Yeah, it's clunky. The theory is clunky.
Yeah, Hollywood, figure it out. What you guys are?
Because in 28 Days Later and 28 Weeks Later, it was a virus. It wasn't, and they
that's,
weren't
that's
necessarily
like the modern. It was like, is it like the virus?
Yeah, but with that one, it's a rage virus in 28 days and 28 weeks later. Where I don't know, they were, I guess they were still zombies in the traditional sense, but they died if they didn't get food over time. So once everyone was a zombie, they would eventually die in about a month because they just died of starvation because they started
testing
them.
Right, so when they were inflicted by the virus, they did not die. Whereas a zombie, I guess I shouldn't say that.
But it wasn't really, it was really more like rage. So in 28 days later,
they almost become
dad,
like rabies.
They get towards the end, yeah, and the dad, like they're still intact, their little unit. And then the dad looks up and a drop of blood from a dead zombie up top falls down and goes in his eye. Ugh. And he gets infected and he immediately becomes super angry and tries to kill, you know, his loved ones and his posse. And so then they kill him. That's fundamentally different than being a zombie where you're just like this undead staggering creature. So there's like a difference because it started in chimps. This is making me feel really nerdy. But anyway. But so yeah, I don't know. There's differences, obviously, yeah. Which is fine. They're
which
different.
I referenced rabies a second ago. Rabies is terrifying, and it's like a real world zombie making virus.
I don't know much about it.
So let me tell you a little bit about rabies, Dan. First of all, it's the way that rabies spreads itself is through saliva, right? So if you get inflicted with rabies, you bite me, and then the spit from your bite gets in me, and now I have rabies, right?
Good.
So the virus causes, I don't know what it's called. It's called like, maybe it's hydrophobia. I don't know. But it causes the infected party to have a severe fear of water. So if you shouldn't do this because it's kind of unsettling. But if you're curious, go on YouTube and you can like search people who have rabies and their reaction to water and they like freak out. And the reason is that what the rabies virus doesn't want you to do is drink water and dilute your spit because then the virus isn't as effective. So it actively gives your brain a fear of water to maintain the concentration of virus in your spit so that it can spread itself better. So it's like...
That's crazy.
It's creepy, yeah. It's like a real-world zombie virus. Just all the stuff you... Go online. Everyone go online and read about rabies because it's terrifying.
And how does a... Obviously, like, even viruses reproduce and they gain traction through natural selection and random mutation. So how does a virus get a random mutation to have... fear instilling from it.
That's insane.
That's what's crazy.
And the fact that it gets in your brain and it makes you do stuff you wouldn't normally do. That's weird.
I feel like there's another virus that was doing that at some point, but I can't remember what it was.
There's another virus, and I shouldn't even bring it up because I'm going to butcher it. I don't know enough about it, but it's a virus, I think, or maybe it's a... Yeah, I think it's a virus that'll get in the brain of ants and like take over ants and... I don't know, does something with ants. But like,
and then don't they die at the end? It like shoots out of them. It's a fungus, right?
Maybe, I've seen this.
I think it was in the, it's like a rainforest thing.
Yeah.
That these ants get it, and then it like, it like spiders get it too, like a bunch of different rainforest insects get it, and then it's a fungus, and it grows inside of them. It does control
maybe that's
them.
What it, yeah,
and then
yeah,
it
yeah.
like bursts through, so that you see these dead ants that have like these huge things coming out of their... It's crazy.
That's
like
terrifying.
Horns coming out. This is the fungus.
Man. Nature's crazy, you guys. What's that Twitter account?
Nature is scary.
It's a great, yeah.
I could watch wildebeest get eaten by various creatures all day.
Yeah, I fell down in a YouTube rabbit hole one time when I was just watching lions eat stuff. God, just the way that lions kill stuff is crazy. It was when I was watching this male lion, like comes up on a wildebeest and like isolates it from the herd, jumps, latches onto its throat, which is obviously how they kill big game, is they just like bite down its throat and suffocate it. But he's just getting trampled on by the, like, it's like kicking him in the ribs and trying to get it off his throat. And he's just hanging on. It's just gross. And then obviously, like, you can see it, like, slowly start to lose life and the fight goes out of it. And you're just like, oh, but I like lions more than I like wildebeest. So I was rooting for the lion.
Yeah. I was watching this bear just, like, right next to this, like, fast moving stream. And he's just eyeing it. And then he plunges his head and both of his claws into the stream. And comes out with a fish in his mouth.
Doesn't make any sense.
How does that happen?
Doesn't make any sense.
Because fish are so lightning fast. Not to mention, as soon as you hit water, like if you reach straight down to water fast, the water, like the fluid of it, just like it deflects your movement. So you think you're going to stab down and grab something, you know, like your palm will just make your hand move a little bit away.
And how there's like the light refraction. So like where you're looking at the fish isn't actually where it is. So you take that in account with what you're talking about with like how the water affects your movement, on top of the fact that the bear kind of has to lead the fish because the fish is actively swimming, it's like to do it in one stab is
crazy.
Insane.
Yeah. Like it makes a lot more sense whether they're just downstream and they catch the ones that are like kind of jumping out of the water or whatever. But regardless, these creatures, miraculous.
Miraculous.
Miraculous. My favorite is the praying mantises. They'll like hang out on a bee's nest and just start snatching them out of the air and just eating them. Crazy. Praying mantises are probably my favorite creature. They're just terrifying. Look like aliens.
Look like aliens. They look like, yeah, they're just human enough where they kind of stand on, I mean, not two legs, but they have the upright sort of posture and those little arms with little spikes. And then their head kind of looks like a, like you're saying, it looks like an alien head, but it also looks like they have a little neck. Like they look kind of like weird human things.
And they just seem so tough. They look up at you. It's like, you know, if I was even close to as big as you,
yeah,
I would eat you.
You're lucky
I would eat you alive.
Size.
Yeah. If I was even a third of your size, I would just totally eat you alive right now. Just give them a fist,
I got you, bro.
And yeah. Be on our way.
Yeah. And they're cool because they're like totally harmless. Whereas, you know, you don't want to mess with certain spiders, but praying mantis, you can like pick up. They don't bite.
They'll hang out with
they
you.
Just hang out.
Yeah.
Crawl around. They do that weird like shuffly walk thing. They like walk and they'll shuffle, shuffle, and walk, shuffle, shuffle. They're doing a little dance. I don't know why they do that.
Because they do whatever they want. That's why.
Because I'll dance when I walk.
There are no rules.
I don't care
about
you.
There are no rules that apply
to praying
mantises.
I don't care about your rules.
Yeah.
That's what you should go as for Halloween. You should go as a praying mantis.
Yet another costume idea that I would fall vastly short of. And I would hate it.
Just picture you with like a green pants, a green t-shirt on, like green paint smudged on your face, and then like like
I just
cardboard
have
spines
limp
on your
yeah
on your arms. I'm a mantis.
Well, look, this was a I think pretty successful Halloween podcast.
Ooh, spooky Halloween podcast. All right, Twinsies listeners, that's it for this week, and we'll catch you next week with episode 28.
Adios.